The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. Money back as a free bet on any championship match on live TV. If you're losing, first goal scorer bet gets a goal.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shit shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
We're going to start with football, Gerard, because you've come into the studio and Brian Carroll is on the phone. So there we go. It's no slight on the hurling, which was yesterday. Usually I would start with that. But the football seems, when you watch two hurling games, I don't know if you did yesterday, football seems so far away. It seems like so long ago on Saturday. I want to start off with the Kilcoo-Ballyboden game, because that was the most exciting. The other one was inevitable, really, wasn't it? But this one was a really exciting game right to the very end. And we thought the Ballyboden comeback, which they always do, would happen, and it didn't, and it was their own fault it didn't. Ryan Baskell a free and one from play, which would have levelled it up.
Thankfully we got an entertaining game in the second semi-final, because the first game was fairly boring overall, Willie.
Yeah,
I know we'll come on to that in a minute. Ballyboden, they lost one game all year. A semi-final of the league against Ballymun Kickhams.
Or the final of the league?
The final of the league, sorry. Yeah. And they've been flying all year other than that. And again, when you look at their dominant periods of games, it's in the last kind of quarter that they tend to push on. And no doubt Kilcoo would have prepared for that. Again, they had a couple of opportunities. The momentum was going with them a couple of times, but a few poor turnovers, missed opportunities. And in fairness to Kilcoo, when they did win the possession back, they were so calm. With the ball, they were getting the right guys onto the football. Conor Laverty, again, another guy
he dropped back really well.
A very clever coming out, throwing the old arm around the defender and drawing the free and sore head and whatever.
Yeah.
Playing the game as you do and slowing it down in the last couple of minutes. But a very, very entertaining game. Delighted to see Kilcoo go in. That's probably my Dublin club.
You're retired now.
I'm retired now. I can say it now. But parents to Bowden, they're still the last Dublin club to win a Club All Ireland, I think 2015-16. So fair play to them too. But look, they'll be disappointed. It was a good opportunity for them as well.
Well, that's the thing. Listen, at the end of the day, Kilcoo are a small little village team, so you would be delighted to see the underdog kind. You know, the small little limited resources and all that. But like, I saw something in this game that I'd never seen before in Gaelic football, and I hope I have this right now, but it was Colin Baskell was taking a free kick, and he was terrible on the frees in the first half. Like, when Ballyboden look back on it, at all the chances they missed. And then you look at it, Kilcoo didn't miss the same level of chances, and then you're saying Kilcoo were the Kilcoo the better team, or did they just take their chances better? I think that's pretty much what it was. But Baskell had this free and he missed it, and he had missed one before that. And then all of a sudden the linesman walks out into the field and gets the referee's attention, and this free is brought up 30 metres. Now they showed a replay of it, and I was thinking, what's happened here? Because I didn't notice anything wrong with this on the other camera angle. The two lads in front of it didn't really move. There was nothing really untoward there. The only thing you could see is that a Kilcoo player walked behind Colin Baskell. Now, Colin Baskell might have slightly caught him in his... He didn't walk up past him like we often see players do trying to play the game and put him off. He walked behind him. And for me, the linesman got the referee's attention and brought that up because he walked behind him within 30 metres. Because the rule is a free kick is brought up 30 metres if an opposing player is nearer than 13 metres to the ball before a free kick or a sideline kick is taken. Now, it doesn't say free 30 metres in front of the ball, so there must be like a radius of 13 metres around it.
The GAA will probably rectify that maybe for next season. No, it's the first time I've ever seen it. We've all seen fellas walking alongside a guy, try to run across in front of him, putting the hands up in front of the kicker. But certainly at first, seeing a guy kind of going in behind him, probably it was a clever tactic from Kilcoo. They obviously discussed it because the two fellas in front of Colley when he was looking to take the shot, and they were throwing a bit of movement in themselves. And as Colley was again trying to, on the instep in the right foot, making that angled run before he struck the ball, the Kilcoo guy was just mirroring him, going the opposite direction and trying to get, as you said, trying to get into the...
Maybe he shouted something at him. Maybe we're not being fair on this. It's hard to know. I'd never seen anything like that before. Had you? And it just looked like such a soft kind of... Like, he'd knocked over the free, had missed the free.
Yeah.
And it was Jesus, like, because a couple of things had gone against Kaku at that stage, and it was like, Jesus, Ballyboden had got a couple of soft frees.
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting one, but in fairness to the Kaku guys, they're obviously thinking about the game. How can we get into this fella's head? The two Basquels doing most of the scoring for Ballyboden in their campaign. I think they kicked 8 again between them in the game on Saturday. But yeah, I suppose Kilkeel are trying something different than I suppose the Northern teams are known, probably more so for the dark arts, or they certainly used to be known for the dark arts, and you'll see a couple of other squads probably copying off them now going forward, you know?
Yeah, no, they definitely are. Ah, look, that caught on everywhere, those dark arts, but yeah. I do agree, it originated with, I think, Armagh, and then Armagh, Tyrone, yeah. And then kind of...
Donegal.
Well, no, it spread to everybody else as well. Yeah. No, we're completely blaming them, but it definitely started up there. 5 black cards in the game. Aaron Waters, what was he thinking? Only on the field. No need for him to do that at all. So that was a black card, no complaints.
And you can only assume he was frustrated maybe not starting the game, because Arden Waters would have started a lot of Bowden's games up to this point, obviously coming in trying to make an impression, hand passes the ball off, going for the return. I think it was Conor Laverty.
Was he really checking him? He actually had to go out of his way to push him.
No, but about Laverty, because I think he was nearly, when he hand passed the ball, Waters, he was still 10 yards from the Kilkeel player, if it was Laverty, and the Kilkeel player definitely took the line a bit, like the forwards with a Gary Owen being kicked from the scrum half. You know, they're not allowed to block him overtly, but they can
drift
so to speak. Yeah. But it was silly from Waters, and I can only imagine it was down to frustration.
It looked like that, because Waters has to do there is take a step the other side, and he's gone. He had all the momentum. Do you know what I mean? He was gone. Michael Darragh, probably technically a black as well.
Yeah, again, probably born out of frustration coming to the latter stages.
Didn't play well at all, did he?
Well, that's the point, you know. Yeah. There's more in Michael Darragh. Maybe sometimes when the pitch is a bit harder, his kind of his rect running style is more
of a weapon, yeah.
Or more of a weapon, yeah. And quite often on the heavier pitch, when he is that, probably he's into his 30s now as well, so you're not getting away from fitter guys, but younger guys as quickly as he used to. But again, probably frustrated and silly.
Dylan Wall lined up on him as well, and he has the athleticism to stay with him and you know what I mean, get around the field with him as well. Daryl Brannigan got one too, and that looked like Stonewall black as well. Yeah. And there was two late ones, Conor Laverty and young McAvoy, who they were obvious ones as well, pulling down. Daryl Brannigan had to get it. Couldn't have any complaints with all the black cards. Like, I mean, that's just...
No, and Brannigan, you know, you could have said it was a loss. To Kuku, again, we talked about him in the lead-up to the match, him breaking forward from the wing-back position. He obviously got his goal too before he received the black card, but Kuku handled it well. The last two, like you mentioned, you're just taking it for the team at that stage, trying to slow down the clock.
Yeah,
I think there's maybe 4 or 5 minutes of extra or injury time was played past the 60, and
you don't understand what's going on there. Here's one I want to ask you about, because you're a centre half back for most of your career, played a little bit on the wing there as well, like to get up and go outside of the left,
kick it wide.
But here's one, because I got a bit of criticism on Twitter about this, because someone had sent me this about Bob Dwan had a big hit on Dylan Wall in the first half. Now, Dylan Wall takes a pop pass, and you could say it was almost a bit too far for him. By the time he collected it, he was practically on top of Bob Dwan. Now, Bob Dwan had a decision to make. What am I going to do here? Do I put my hands out and let him run into my chest and knock me down? Or do I set up to try and give him a good hit myself? So he did that. By the time Dylan Wall had caught the ball and set himself, he just about started to bring his shoulder down for the hit, and Bob Dwan got him on the inside of the shoulder, and the ball spilled out. And people were saying to me, you haven't a clue what you're talking about. That was a frontal hit. And I was like, it wasn't. It was a good hit. That's what you want, you know, your defender to do. Take him out. So the referee didn't give a free at all. So I'm wondering, from your point of view, who would have faced that scenario so many times, what are you meant to do there?
Well, again, to give a very relative and contrasting scenario, in the first game, I think it was Gary Soyce came through of a pop ball off Martin Farrer, and the fullback for Nemo, number 30 on whoever it was, he hit him in a similar kind of manner, and it was a free in. Gary Soyce, he took a few minutes to kind of get himself back together. It was a nice hit. in hurling, those hits are allowed. They're permitted. They take place in Gaelic football. It used to be the norm. It's not anymore. So again, a couple of years ago, remember with Dublin, one of our targets, and even the club, you're trying to limit the amount of scoreable frees you give the opposition, say. So we looked at what's being given as a free now and trying to adapt your tackle technique to the referee on right. the day. And there's only so many decent kind of inter-county referees out there, and you kind of get used to how they police the collision area, and you got to just take the hits like that now on your chest. So you got to open yourself up, take the hit in your chest, and a bit like a charge, frontal charge in basketball, if you go back in your backside, you're hoping that you'll get the free.
Right. So the idea that traditionally it's a centre back, if he's coming down the middle, make sure you hit him hard. That's gone now, because that's it. Because when someone takes a pop pass close to you, that's a perfect opportunity to go bang.
Exactly. Right? And the only person I see, and you can add to this if you have seen anything else yourself, Willie, but James McCarthy is the only person I see hitting a decent shoulder charge. But you have to be timing a run alongside a guy or coming in maybe at an angle. But both fellas have to be going in the same direction. I don't think that's in the rules, but it has to be shoulder to shoulder, I think, is what's written down in the rules. But it's about kind of timing it as well, as best you can. But 9 times out of 10, a free is given in.
Yeah, free is given, yeah. And that's the thing. And another dangerous thing of doing what Duane did, that if Dylan Wall cops him a bit earlier, if he sidesteps him, he's out of picture and he's gone past him. So the timing has to be perfect on that. So I don't know. While Duane did rattle him, maybe it was a free. I'll change my mind on that. But like, I mean, for a free, Dylan Wall's completely rattled, and it's not the worst outcome in the world, even if it is a free. You know, the ref didn't give it as a free, but I don't know. I would still be saying, if it's out around that area, give him a good record.
And I fully agree with you, yeah. It's a bit riskier closer you are to your own goal.
Yeah. Stupid in there. Yeah. Any closer to goal, you're being reckless at that stage. Did you notice this on the television? I didn't notice this. I'm sure you did, considering that you've played in club football. Is James Madden came on. And I didn't know. They called him Seamus O'Madden.
Yeah, I was talking to one of the lads this morning about that. So that's obviously I don't think any AFL fellas will be listening to this podcast.
He's with Brisbane. Apparently he got permission.
Yeah.
I think he did. But if he didn't get permission, they're playing a silly game there because it was copped. I don't know who copped it anyways. But well, Seamus O'Madden.
He got a yellow. He'd only come on and he got his yellow. And that's when I actually noticed his name popping up then. There's another fella, Shane. Is it James Madden? Shane Madden, who actually played senior hurling with Ballyboden.
Right.
He was in UCD and he played a bit of football as well. For a moment, I thought it was him, but it was definitely James Madden having come back.
Yeah, very good one. So hopefully he's not in trouble. I think Brisbane Lions are a little bit less strict. It depends on the club you play with. Mm. Obviously, Anthony Rainbow said after the game, because obviously he's talking about the wides at the end, and you don't associate that. Against Aroge, they were lethal. Against Nafina, they were lethal. Against all these teams, they're coming back and they're lethal. He says, he's talking about some of the wides at the end. He said, there are scenarios we work in training because we knew we'd be in those in the game. We put ourselves in that scenario in the last few minutes of the game, but we just didn't work ourselves out of it as well as the last couple of games. And I think that was it. It was interesting that, so they're in training. I'm sure they're working through a situation where there's 13 defenders back. And mm-hmm. he says, right, you've 3 minutes left. We're a point down. Blow the whistle and let's see how they work out. Mm-hmm. And usually they work it pretty well. And they did work it well yesterday. They just didn't execute and put it over the bar.
And you have to give credit to Kilku. Again, over the course of the 60 minutes, they were putting savage pressure on the ball carrier. The whole time they weren't letting fellas settle. They were blocking runners off the ball out of the referee's peripheral vision and leaving the linesman, but they were doing everything that they needed to do not to let the Ballyboden players settle. And evidence of that is the fact that they missed those couple of frees and the few opportunities that they were kicking in the previous game in the latter stage of matches, coupled with the black cards that they received. Ballyboden were frustrated, and that frustration was born out of hard work, a lot of it off the ball stuff that the Kilku players were putting in.
They matched Ballyboden's work rate, really, didn't they? And they actually raised them. They matched them and raised them a little sum as well, didn't they, Kilku?
And then the bit of hunger, the stuff that is hard to quantify sometimes, Kilku have never been there. I'm not saying that Bowden didn't want it as much, but when you haven't tasted it at all before, sometimes there can be something else driving you on to get over the line, and I think that would have added to Kilku's energy levels throughout the whole game.
It was. Their first goal came from a turnover. So it was a great pass by Aidan Branigan, and then Conor Laverty, just a lovely little flick down, opened the whole thing up. Yeah. He's so clever, Laverty, isn't he? We keep comparing him to Ian Burke with Galway. You're just small, but just always does the right thing and is smart. And it was a great finish by Ryan Johnson at the end. I was reading it was 22 seconds from the time Ballyboden were turned over to when it was scored in the back of the net. Like, I mean, that's fantastic stuff.
I know it is. And again, it's something that we've seen from Kilku, and again, defensive teams that set up quite defensively. One of the things they target is to turn the opposition over and just break as quick as you can. Everyone who's involved in the play, just off you go and get up and support the runner off the shoulder. But again, a lovely finish. Ryan Johnson actually had a super game. He was very strong for them throughout. And
he was.
In
and
possession,
he was
and carrying the ball forward.
Yeah. Very, very good. Very, very athletic. Very good on the ball. His brother, I'd be worried about his form, Jerome. He was very poor now. You know, he's an inter-county level player and he didn't look it yesterday.
Yeah.
Or Saturday.
And again, that's where you need the rest of your teammates to probably pick up the slack when an individual doesn't perform, and that's probably something that the Bowden players will be disappointing themselves. You know, again, Collie and Ryan, they kicked eight, they still missed a few, but a lot of other players didn't show up as well as they had in previous games for Ballyboden, and like you mentioned, one player doesn't perform, he might be a big name. That's when other guys need to step up to the plate. But to go back to Laverty again, Connor's about, I think he's 34 or 5 at this stage, and extremely fit and obviously extremely hungry as well.
Yeah.
But you know, I think he's a huge player for them. Everything that's good about Kilku goes through them, and you can see him talking as well the whole time. Defensively, and getting himself back, and like that, the last 10-15 minutes of the match, the amount of balls and that he picked up as well, and directing play and winning frees and slowing the play down. Obviously took his black card then as well at the end. You know?
That was very good management as well to bring him out, because he's so important to their game plan going forward, but it wasn't the time for that kind of nice ball into him. Yeah. It was batting down the hatches type of thing, and he was great. Did you ever, Collie Baskell, it was Daryl Branigan man-marked him, and geez, he did a brilliant job on him. Like, Collie Baskell did nothing from open play. Mm. Now, when he got a few great frees towards the end, but he was just wasn't in the game at all. And then started making me think that if he is man-marked like that, and why is he not making the Dublin team when he's like seriously talented player? And then, you know, like we spoke about here before, maybe he needs to adapt, change his game, add other elements to his game other than getting the ball and going on a run with it.
Yeah, and again, that's the difference between senior club football and inter-county football. Guys at inter-county level, Division 1, 2, anyway, they're physically fit, well-conditioned, and they're able to stick it out.
Stay with you.
Exactly, yeah. Technically, they might be lacking maybe in Division 2 in terms of ability, but they can stick it out. And what we saw with Darrell Branigan then as well, extremely fit guy. I assume he watched Collie's performances, certainly in the latter stages of games where Collie's direct opponents was fatiguing. And then that's when a bit of space opened up. But it's easier to manage a player who is looking to take players on. He is very talented, Colin, in fairness to him, but again, at inter-county level, you have to probably develop and evolve a bit more to keep the opposition defender and defence thinking about what you're going to do.
Yeah, definitely. Daryl Branigan got a brilliant goal. It was a brilliant finish. It was an element of luck. Dylan Ward was going for a point that came back off the bar. But like from there, he fairly buried it into the bottom corner, didn't he, for a wing back?
Yeah, no, he was very...
It was a brilliant finish.
He was very calm, composed. Again,
he made it look easy. It's not that easy to rocket it into the bottom corner from there, is it?
No, no, because there's a lot at stake, a lot of pressure at stake, and you need to have... Is it fire in the belly, ice in the mind, as you hear people talking about over the years, and he certainly had the ice in the mind just to ensure that he didn't bloody just lash it over the bar, which can happen sometimes with defenders. But that was another huge moment in the game as well, and it just put more pressure on Bowden the whole time and added to the frustration that was probably growing within their own team, that they weren't getting the scores or some of the things they were trying weren't coming off. But But it was a great finish.
But the thing about that, why it was such a great finish, and you know, with players that aren't used to being up there, say you're one-on-one with the goalkeeper, what I always do wrong, I'm terrible for scoring goals, brutal. I take my eye off the ball, like I'm I'm not used to being in those situations, so I could look at a goalie. I'm not looking technically at the ball. There was two players in front of him, which easily could have taken his eye off the ball, and then there was the goalkeeper, and he still was able to put it down into that bottom corner. Like, I don't know. I just think if I had been in that position, that could go anywhere, because technically you have to. It's like a golf shot. You have to watch the ball. Anybody listening obviously knows that. But the amount of players that take their eye off the ball and you know, screw it off their boot.
Well, the percentage of shots, if you were to look back at the All-Ireland series, or say from the Super 8s just gone up to and including the All-Ireland final replay, the majority of goals that go in is rolled along the ground. They're the percentage shots. The ones that fly in top corner or fly past the keeper because so much power, you know, they don't always come off. But the percentage shots, I'm sure if anyone's listening, someone doing a bit of research there, is a bit of time wants to look back over all those games or to look at where the goals went. It is the controlled ones that are placed in the corner. Even Conor Callan's goals in the semi-final, two examples then of
Well, he never blasts the ball. He doesn't even blast points. Everything he does is just dropping over the bar, isn't
it? Yeah.
No, he's the ultimate Jim Gavin percentage man.
Exactly, yeah.
But right, we want to talk about this other game. There's not too much more to say about this. I don't think Cara Finn were at their brilliant best in any... Anyway, they had the job done after 18 minutes. They were 1-4 to no score up. There's no way back for Nemo at that stage. I know the Cara Finn players weren't thinking that. But if you went out with Nemo Rangers before that game and said you'd keep Cara Finn to 1-10, you would be thinking to yourselves, geez, we have a great chance here, lads. This is fantastic. But their forwards never showed up.
Nah, they were poor Nemo. A lot of players didn't perform well for them. Again, when we talked about it in the lead up to the game, you were hoping that Cara Finn might draw on the... embarrassment / disappointment of being hammered by 15 points in the All-Ireland final 2 years previous, and that would drive the standard or drive the intensity. Yeah. But from the throw in, they just look flat. Nemo, a lot of guys,
even inexcusable that they were flat. Yeah. Knowing that revenge was their motivation, and in a lovely little tight ground like Ennis, where they can get those hits in early.
Absolutely. They just underperformed. Did they train too hard over the Christmas? Obviously, we don't know what schedule they were following, but they looked heavy-legged. They looked without ideas. But even some of the early shots in the first 10, 15 minutes, you know, there were panic shots out on the wing, skewing off the foot. There was nobody really taking leadership, I think, of the play. Again, akin to the likes of Laverty or Ryan Johnson, who were trying to get on the ball and dictate things. They just were very, very flat. Cara Finn, they definitely came down to the pace of the game, I would have said, once they had one-four
after 80 minutes. I think Nemo didn't score until nearly half. It was nearly half time before they even got a point for play. It was their corner forward. Horgan got one, number 15, and celebrated it.
I think it was 24 minutes. I remember as I was watching it, I think it was 24 minutes on the clock. Left footed point.
To be celebrating there, mate.
There's nothing to be celebrating there. But even their handling the balls into the forwards, balls were sloppy. It was very. But maybe the issue is with the Munster Championship. I know we talked about it briefly off air. Munster must have been ridiculously poor because Neo obviously didn't get a decent test. If they got to an All Ireland club semi final to play at that level of football, that level of intensity, because they could have been blown out of the water. If that was All Ireland final day again in Croke Park,
they were getting the same treatment.
They were getting worse. Like, you know,
they were terrible. In Horgan's defence, it was more of a celebration. Come on, lads!
Let's
rather than, you know, I'm celebrating my pint. I have to give him a little bit of credit.
The old hurlers fist bump. The hurlers love that.
Oh yeah, they absolutely love it. Yeah, the Radic Boris Lee boys read it yesterday as well. We actually talked, or I'm actually going to say it to Brian Carroll in part two. There was actually the first ever fist pump hook. So it was McCormack, Boris Lee wing back, fist pumped, and then went to fist pump again. And Thomas's player, one of the Burks, got annoyed with this and actually tried to grab his hand to stop him fist pumping the second time. So it's just reached new levels now where we're getting fist pump hooks. But it was Paul Carrigan and Luke Connolly. Let's be honest, they're their two talismen. That's their Mossy Quinn and their Connolly. Like, that's the reality of it. And neither of them showed up. And Luke Connolly, a wild effort or two in the first half, and then a bit of panic sets in, and Paul Kerrigan's not in. And Liam Silk was marauding forward and bringing Connolly with him, and Nemo surely should have had a plan for. There's a very good chance Liam Silk will be marking Connolly or Kerrigan. What's going to happen when he bombs forward? Do we want Connolly back in the backs marking him? No. Do you know? Did it just? I don't know.
It was it was like a group of fellas kind of showing up, having played with each other, say, last year. They've had their Christmas break, and so we'll get going again, and here's our first nearly challenged game, and we'll figure stuff out.
There
was no structure. Like, no. It was hard to tell what they were trying to achieve, even in how they're moving the ball. And again, when you see your main players, now Kerrigan picked up a few plays, but he's picking them out around the middle of the pitch, and he was throwing his 1-2s, but there was not a whole lot coming from it.
Yeah.
But Luke Connolly, as you mentioned, one or two away with shots and in nearly 45 as well. And again, when your better players are underperforming like that, that lack of confidence can kind of trickle down into the rest of the team, which it certainly did. But you'd be like, Nemo are better than that, surely. But you'd be disappointed for them. I'm sure they're disappointed themselves. But they just really underperformed. And Cora Finn were probably in second or third.
Yeah, I think they were. And it's almost like Nemo, knowing what a great club were, they're almost like they were in fear of Cora Finn. It's like they were beaten before they went out. They were a beaten docking. Could end the Cora Finn goal after 33 seconds wouldn't have helped their confidence. And that was a beautiful goal. That's them at their very best, right? Yeah. This is them moving the ball fast. Farraher, which is just a lovely, clever ball. Like, I mean, you could make that run with different teams and not even have a hope of getting that pass. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Other teams might recycle that back out.
Yeah.
He's going for the juggler there. And Lundy knows that Farraher, you know, wants to give the right ball and makes that run. And he just floats it lovely, you know, into his path.
It's a lovely style of play. And having lost the Corfin, I think maybe 4 years ago in the semi-final in was it
Tullamore?
Yeah, Tullamore. They're playing the same style of football. They've nearly the same players, and Kieran Fitzgerald, who's still going, he must be thinking mid.
He's 39,
is he? Fair play to him.
39 on New Year's Day.
Was he? Fair
so
play
it's
to
a terrible
him.
Birthday for any Gaelic footballer or hurler.
Yeah.
You're
nearly
a year behind everyone.
On New Year's, yeah, true enough. But their wing forwards hug the touch lines, which leaves little pockets between the wing forward and the centre forward. And if the outlet ball is non, if the guys are being marked at wing forward, there's a massive pocket for your two guys, generally speaking, to be kept up there, to run into either side of the D. And then the likes of Sice and then Lundy for the goal, just cutting off at a corner at an angled run. I think Gary Sice was brilliant in as well, when he had to be.
Yeah, he had a great battle with that O'Donovan fella, actually. There was a bit of needle between the two of them.
Yeah, and he took a few smacks, Sice, and I'm very fond of him as a player now.
I'm a big fan of his.
He just gets up now. He takes it. This is part of the game. He doesn't stand down either, but then he puts the ball over the bar. He's kicking his frees. He's causing all sorts of mayhem in the opposition defence.
He kicked one free badly in the first half, and I was thinking surely one of the Farrahers would have taken that. He took an awful hit.
Mm.
Maybe that was the one you were talking about.
And then
he gets up and he actually shook his head to shake the cobwebs out of his head, and then missed a simple free for him.
Yeah, and then again the sign of a great player, then the next free
he got it
slightly further out, then he sticks it over. But they've an awful lot of quality, have
Corfin
in and
they do. Jesus, they do.
They didn't get a decent challenge. Now, would a Ballyboden or Kilcoo have taken Corfin on Saturday if they're playing against them? Possibly, if they didn't, if Corfin didn't up the intensity. But then again, Corfin, they probably respond to sometimes what's in front of
that's
you.
The thing.
We've all been there. You're cruising, nice and comfortable.
Because Guidora were the Kilcoo last year, and Corfin, you know, got to that pitch of that when they needed to.
Now,
obviously, they're going to Croke. I'd say you would love to have met them in Croke Park in one of your best years and have a good. Because I always thought, when you were going well and Corfin, I was saying, just meet them in a final in Croke Park would be fantastic.
Yeah, would have been great, and probably play a similar style of football and trying to kick the pass the ball forward as soon as possible and let the forwards kind of do the damage. But they got us. They bet as well.
They got you when they're unknown. I wanted you to meet each other in the next 2 years, maybe in a final, you know, when you had both 1-1.
And I think we got back the next year, Slochnaill bet us then the semi final up and down. But again, we were poor that day too. Slochnaill were good. But it would have been nice, all right, for sure.
Wasn't meant to be.
Yeah.
But it would have been nice for me. It would have been a lot nicer for you, I'm sure. Come here, just to finish up, Pat Splann was writing in the Sunday World. I don't often comment on Sunday World articles. There's loads of other news coming out from the weekend now, and we're going to talk about them on Thursday. Cottle McShane, obviously. We'll just do this as a review show, and we'll go through all the news of the week on Thursday. But this Pat Splann one was interesting because I was there myself. He says, on Friday before Christmas, I bumped into a Kerry footballer at a wedding. I couldn't help but notice the player wasn't drinking alcohol. Apparently he wasn't allowed because he had training the next day, 5 days before Christmas. This was another example of how ludicrous the whole inter-county circus has become. I was at that wedding, and I know the Kerry player, I was talking to him, and he wasn't drinking. It was the 20th of December. Mm. And he didn't drink because he trained the next day. Now, it would be one of the younger players, and whether he said I have, whether he asked the permission or whether he felt he couldn't ask. You know when young players, they wouldn't be able to say to the manager, can I drink the night before that? You just wouldn't even think to do it. You're still, you know, too young to be making those calls. I just thought it was cruel. On the 20th of December, Ger, yeah. And this fella's drinking minerals at a wedding. You know, when everyone else is in the Christmas spirit.
Yeah, and there's probably two things there. You're looking at the player himself, who's obviously a younger guy trying to
he's become dedicated,
established.
Obviously dedicated player.
He's dedicated, so he's looking at these. Now, I know the not the FBD, what's the one that down in Munster? Sorry,
the McGrath Cup.
McGrath Cup. Now, I know the under-20s are seem to be
are in that, yeah.
But you're from my own memories, the first couple of years on the panel, I drank very little. And I soon learned as I got a bit older, but that was silly. But you drank very little over that period because you're trying to make a name for yourself in the early stages or the couple of challenges that you might have,
yeah.
And get into a league panel or get into a league first 15. So that's one thing from the player's point of view. Then the other thing is the whole fixture schedule is still a mess.
Yeah.
In my view, putting the these provisional competitions, playing a couple of rounds before Christmas, I think is just wholly unfair. The National League could start a week later, I think. The under-20s football being moved back to late January into February, and then an under-20s league is thrown in January. This is my third level tack coming through here as well. Yeah. But looking at an individual, like most inter-county players now, there's something like 80% of them are involved in third level education. So they're all playing Gaelic football or hurling at some level. And some guys then are playing for probably five teams if they're on the freshers in college or the senior team in college. They're on the under-20s, they're on the seniors with the club and the county. And it's sort of been the same problem when you're in college in Maynooth. So I was in Maynooth as well. You're playing for six teams then over the course of a couple of months. Now, as a young player, you play, you don't mind. But I would agree with Pat's plan. Like, it's a massive problem. And
so how do you fix just this issue here, right? So should the manager have a training session on the 20th? The 20th was Saturday. Mm-hmm. Like, for all we know, the Kerry manager might have given him all the next week off and said, take the Christmas week off, but we'll have a training session that Saturday. The player had a wedding on the Friday. So the solution to this, the manager's not potentially not wrong having a training session Saturday, if that's his last one before Christmas or whatever. Mm-hmm. The player can't go drinking and land to training with a smell of drink off the next day. That's just raw. You shouldn't mm-hmm. be landing in this day and age. So the solution for anybody, I don't know, listening, is for the player to go to the manager and say, I have a wedding. Can you give me a pass? I'll train on, you know, I'll do my own thing on Sunday. And I would imagine 80% of the managers at intercounty level in December would say, go on ahead. Wouldn't they? No?
I would
they
say
should. What are you going to do in December, in the middle of December anyways?
What it is a tough one. I think the question shouldn't be left to be answered to the player or the inter-county manager. I think the question should be asked of Croke Park and the guys organising the fixtures to ensure that there is a decent break over the Christmas period for guys to have their couple of beers or whatever, or let their hair down. But again,
that's
as
a training break and a match and a
sure makes sense. Like certainly to me,
what if this wedding landed in April?
Mm.
You know, and you had a similar situation.
Well, as a player, you're looking at your goals. Like we've all foregone weddings. My wife, when we're going out of time, like she would have had friends getting married and. I know it's terrible, but there's times I was delighted I had training on because I didn't have to go.
No one wants to go to their partner's side's weddings.
You know, but unless you're going for a few beers and you bump into one or two fellas who are into the
guy
and you get through. So we've all been there, right? But again, as a player, what are your goals? Like, so are your goals to have a few beers and chase a few women at a wedding? Probably not. Like your goals are to be as fit as you can, mind and body, and there's a lot of the sports science. What would you call it? It's probably been used a bit better now in GAA, where you don't have a massive off season. Your off season is tapered, but you're still minding yourself a bit, so that when you come back into the pre season and the increase in training load, you're not putting yourself at risk of injury, which is what happened. Even you were senior county when I started with Dublin as well. The fellas were carrying big nets, just come back after the Christmas and come championship, it would have been gone often. But those same fellas had a couple of hamstring or groin injuries in the early couple of weeks of training because They're
too far back.
They're too far back. So it's a tough one.
It's only you would have no issues with this anyway through the year, only around Christmas time. It's probably a bit too much. It's probably highlighted when you see the chap on the 20th of December and he's drinking a mineral at a wedding when he should really be relaxing and being able to put the feet up at that point.
Exactly. I know Ryan McMenamin made some comments about playing games in December is ridiculous. You know, December, even November, depending on what stage you're knocked out of the championship, it is rare, and if your club is finished, it is important to be doing a pre-season or a strength block in the gym and getting your bit of running done without...
Tipping away at your own pace, staying fit
and having your couple of beers here and there. But then when you're in Croke Park, again, are putting fixtures on slap bang the middle of December and early January.
How can you ask managers not to train?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's unfair on the managers, it's unfair on the players.
It's unfair on everybody, especially the player in question. Yeah. Right, great stuff, Ger. We're going to leave it there for the football and we'll come back with Brian Carroll and talk about the hurling next.
You can't touch this. Touch this.
A few weeks later, they played Kilkenny below Nolan Park, the same year. And they were being hockey. But the camera went in and thought, there was a fella warming up. Well, Jesus, you should see him. Yeah, now, fuck, he was massive. Legs, arse, built. But I bust out laughing watching him. There he was, the epitome of what I said.
I told you, homeboy, you can't touch this. Yeah, that's how we living and you know can't touch this.
All right, so welcome to the hurling part of the show. Brian Carroll has replaced Ger Brennan. Ger's gone, Brian's here, who was up in Newry yesterday, Brian.
Yeah, oh, what a game. Knew it was going to be a cracker because I'd seen Sloughneil in the Ulster final up there when they beat Dunleigh. So I knew they were going to bring a serious kind of battle to that game. I thought the 11-1 odds were crazy.
Yeah.
Didn't think they'd win it, but I knew they would. Did give them a serious, serious battle, and the 5 points at the end was harsh on them.
Yeah, no, it definitely. Well, that was Colin Fennelly's late goal. Like, they were made sweat the whole way. Like, Sloughneil ran Ballyhale closer than anyone in Leinster in the last 2 years, and probably anyone in the All Ireland series as well. Like, I mean, that shouldn't be underestimated what they did yesterday.
No, serious side. And you feel for Sloughneil because in the three All Ireland semi finals they've played Coolah, Napiershig, and Ballyhale. Like you're literally talking the three best club teams over the last 5 or 6 years. They've been very, very unfortunate. And like I think they would have beaten any of the other two teams, I think, yesterday with the performance that they put in.
Yeah, it seemed to be like that. I saw Pádraig Lodge, who was doing the commentary for RTÉ. You were up there with him. He tweeted afterwards, the GAA should consider playing this year's Alliance Hurling League final at an Ulster venue. He met loads of families in Newry yesterday, parents with hurling mad children saying they rarely get a chance to bring them to a top level hurling game in the province. Did you have that same experience there?
Yeah, it was unbelievable. The amount of people from Antrim and Down and Derry, and they were all in their own club colours. Just purely up to enjoy the game. Obviously see maybe the likes of TJ Reid, Colin Fennelly and Michael Fennelly up close. But it was amazing actually and to speak to a few of them. So, you know, you forget that side of things when you're down here, down this side of the country, and, you know, it's easily accessible to all these games. Newry's a great spot, great field, nice stand, good terraces, everything like that. Bit of a bottleneck to get out of, but apart from that, it's a fantastic venue actually, and you know I'm sure the police will be able to help with the match day arrangements in terms of if it was a larger scale traffic game. I'm sure they're used to that sort of thing. So
yeah,
it is a really good venue, and look, it's just off the menu, off the motorway as well. So it's like it is an option. I think it's something that could be explored.
The Pádraig Fanning, former Waterford manager, tweeted after the game as well. Now this is something I usually throw to Cheddar to get him going and start giving out about this kind of stuff. So he said today's game in Newry should serve as a reminder to the GAA at national level that they are failing hurling in Ulster. The fact that Sloughneil again produced a performance of such quality owes more to their organisation, love of the game, than anything we have done at national level. And it's hard to disagree with him. Like, Sloughneil are a huge example for any club in the country, we know that. But for them to get a hurling team to play at a level like that against Ballyhale Shamrocks, you know, it just shows what can be done if the will is there.
Yeah, and obviously you see the same with all the Antrim teams as well. You know, these are serious hurling people, and geographically it's against them because it's hard to travel to get good practice matches. You know, I've heard plenty of stories of the top teams up there coming down for full weekends down south and playing a couple of matches, maybe one of a Friday, a guest training session maybe of a Saturday, and playing another practice match of a Sunday. Like, that's a huge commitment, as well as obviously a huge overlay in terms of the cost and the spending that's needed to require to keep these teams at the top level. But look, we've seen it over the last number of years, and particularly in the hurling side, you cannot write off any of these teams. You know, you're talking Cush and Dáil, Schlochneil, Lochiel, obviously I know fierce well to beat us in the Club All-Ireland as well.
Yeah.
Dunleigh have come down over the years and done it as well. These are serious, serious hurling teams. And yeah, like, they're as good as anyone in the country. I think there is obviously a hurling snobbery from that perspective, that, you know, they look at these teams and think maybe they're not up to it. And we've probably seen that in the intermediate as well. The Tourine from Mayo, a fantastic hurling club. You know, and they put Father Neil to the pin of their collar in that All-Ireland semi-final too.
Yeah.
And people will be slow to maybe acknowledge that they are hurling people, and that's their first and foremost, and that's their bread and butter.
Well, Father O'Neill's had two men sent off, actually. That was an interesting talking point from that game. I was going to mention it later, but might as well mention it now. They were both straight reds. So I'd say Tommy Walsh and co will be absolutely delighted with that. Like, I mean, that's their number 10 and their number 15. I think they're two wing forward and their corner forward gone for the final, unless they can appeal it.
Yeah, they are going to appeal it, as far as I know. And you know, look, again, we've talked this before. Like, I'd know very little about that game only for a match report, apart from seeing the buff. You know, the buff was added again, and you get to see some of the clips. And you saw probably one of the points of the weekend, Dickie Dalton flicking it up with his foot and throwing a lovely sidestep, sending three lads the wrong way.
Well, just to understand that, because I saw that on the Buff's Twitter, and I was wondering, as a hurling snob, well, you're not on the higher level of a hurling snob, how you feel about Gaelic football skill being used in hurling?
No, brilliant. I actually scored a goal. I have a picture at home. I scored a goal against Kilkenny, and JJ was arm wrestling me at the time, and I actually kicked it into the net. But so I'm fond of an old kick goal myself, or a kick score.
You can do a kick. It's just to know. So Dickie Dalton, just, you see it often in Gaelic football. He just jabbed behind the slitter and popped it up into his hand and scored a great point.
Yeah, and it was brilliant. You know, use of the foot, obviously. Like, you wouldn't even be thinking of doing that. Usually, obviously, you put your hurling underneath it, but you know, he flicked it up lovely and got it lovely. But you know, it's a pity. You know, years ago you used to be able to solo the ball like a, you know, a toe tap. But they've actually removed that rule from hurling now. You can't actually do that anymore.
Right. Okay. When did it get rid of that? I don't remember ever seeing.
I think
that.
It was in maybe the early noughties or late 90s. Yeah, you used to be allowed toe tap, but not anymore.
Right. Okay. Well, you'd be a madman to even trying that, anyways. Why? Well, unless somebody's going to hook you.
If you've lost your hurl, it used to be a thing. If you lost your hurl, you were trying to hold on to possession. That was generally what people were trying to do, until someone maybe came closer or something.
Right. But, right. Yeah, well, you'd probably be a brave man to drop that on your toe, because that ball's fair game then for a hurl, right? So your foot could be taken off of you. I thought there was some good refereeing up in Uri there. Do you remember the time that Colin Fennelly's running through and he overcarried the ball, and Gerard Bradley played very well as a sweeper? He goaded him, so he ran in and gave him a bit of a shoulder. Colin Fennelly, your kind of natural reaction is to maybe swing a little bit back. He did very little to him, but Bradley was trying to get him sent off. He went down and the referee just ignored this, like it didn't happen. And I thought that was fantastic, because Bradley didn't deserve to try and get, or Colin Fennelly didn't deserve anything from it. But often referees just see that happening and, you know, we'll give Colin Fennelly a yellow card for retaliation when, you know, Gerard Bradley, he barely got touched. We all know what he was trying to do, and the referee was having none of it.
Yeah, and I have to say, I was full of praise for Fergal Horgan yesterday. I thought he was excellent. He was up to play all the time. He made a couple of calls that maybe the Schlochneil people didn't appreciate, but yeah, he was up against it.
Sorry to cut you off. You know? He gave Ballyhale a few early soft frees, I thought, no?
Yeah, but still technically there were frees. Like, you look amount of Schlochneil frees the day one where they, you know, particularly Chrissy McCaig, you know, he drove forward loads of times, and you know, they won a lot of frees too. So I think it evened itself out over the whole length of the game. The only one I'd say was contentious was maybe Fennelly's first goal, where he was playing advantage. TJ Reid was fouled, but Fennelly, I thought, took maybe six or seven steps by the time he got the shot off for the goal. That one maybe could have been pulled back just for the free, because it seemed to double penalise Schlochneil almost, and obviously a goal is a big killer blow. But I thought was very good. And to go back to that talking point, sorry, you know, I think you're 100% right. I think that's what singles Fergal Horgan out as one of the top referees, is that he's a hurling man. He's played the game to a top level, and he knows the difference between a belt and, you know, just a kind of a shrug and get a lad off you.
Yeah, no, that's it. When does Colin Fennelly ever take four steps is the next question I might as well.
That's a fact. He usually has three or four on his back, to be fair. We'll give him some credit.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about this because Paddy Stapleton is obviously a big friend of this show, and he's going to have his work cut out, because when Colin Fennelly gets the ball, he runs straight for you. Like, he got caught for barging, I think, once yesterday, but he does it a lot. Like, he's going straight for you, which is not really within the rules.
No, it's not. It's almost rugby style, isn't it? Like, he's so big, you know, and that's what makes him so hard to stop. But Paddy Saint, will relish that too, because he's brilliant at getting in a flick just before he maybe wins the ball. But he's a hard man to stop when he gets going. That last goal, I suppose, epitomised everything about Colin Fennelly at the moment. But he seems to hurl. I know it's club hurling, you might say it's a level ball, but he does seem to hurl with a serious swagger when he's playing with Ballyhale. He really trusts everything about himself there.
And to be fair though, full backs at club level can't handle his physicality, where at inter-county level they might a little bit more. You know, that's seems to be where he gets so much joy. He's almost unmarkable at times, Colin Fennelly, at club level. It's incredible what he's able to do. Michael McShane, the Stocknail manager, said the goal at the end made the scoreline look a wee bit lopsided. That's a 1 or 2 point game there, and I would agree with that. He said we maybe gave away a few soft frees. There was maybe a few soft ones against us, but whatever way, TJ wasn't missing them, and I think that was the difference. And that was it. Like, they kept Ballyhale honest the whole way. And did you notice TJ Reid's reaction? You were at it live. It showed it on the television. TJ was relieved that game was over. Like, he celebrated with a fist pump.
Oh yeah, and they really knew they were in the game. And like, as I said, I think Shocknil would have beaten Manny's a team on yesterday's performance. I thought, to be fair to Ballyhale, after Brendan Rodgers got that fantastic goal, I just think the next play summed up why they're All-Ireland champions. You know, they went direct with a long ball, puck out, Henry comes out and snaps it, great catch. You know, two or three lads ascend on him, you know, Shocknil working hard, but he just had the coolness and the calmness to spot Evan Shefflin sitting in the pocket, and Shefflin then scores from about 70 metres. And it was just, it was a brilliant score in my view. You know, it pushed it back out to two, and it just, you know, said, no matter what you throw at Shocknil, we will have it here today. Yeah. You know, and I just thought it was brilliant.
I find Ballyhale Shamrocks, and this probably Shefflin's influence, in that they've no problem launching it, but they mix it up so well that they'll go short and they play it through the lines. But else, they've no problem Michael Fennelly just launching it, getting it down there, because Fennelly's dangerous. And it often makes me think, some teams like Cork or even Ballygunner, they can be married to one way of playing, and that's easy to set yourself up against. Whereas with Ballyhale Shamrocks, you want to push up and stop them going through the lines, they'll launch it long. You know, you want to start dropping a few bodies back and they'll go through the lines, and Shefflin will be free, or Evan Shefflin, and he'll put over a point. Yeah. I think they have a great balance to the way they play.
And two things on that, and it wouldn't have been noticeable from telly. Number one would have been their use of their spare man. Considering that, you know, Gerard Bradley went into the sweeper role, you know, traditional seven defender sitting behind the centre back, and hurled that excellently. And that's the way Shocknil play. Well, that's the way they played in the Ulster final, obviously, as well, against Dunlay. But instead of Ballyhale mirroring that and putting their spare man in behind Michael Fennelly, they trusted their five backs. They just kept five backs. They left Ronan Corcoran free in the middle of the field.
Right.
And Shocknil didn't cope with that in the first half. And Ronan Corcoran pipped a couple of points, hit a lot of ball in the middle of the field. And I just thought it was a really interesting and very, very effective use of their spare man. They didn't do what, you know, most other teams do. And between Ronan Corcoran and Richie Reid, they hit a lot of ball in that first half. Shocknil had pulled out Brian Cassidy, number 13. He was out playing wing forward, and he was caught between two stools. He didn't know whether to go to Corcoran or to Richie Reid. And between the two of them, I thought they hurled up a storm. And as you said, they worked that ball out really well, really intelligently, until they got it to the likes of Richie Reid or Corcoran, who then could strike from distance. You know, so you're right. And the other thing I would say is they're able to move players around wherever it suits. So actually, after about 15 or 20 minutes, Fennelly actually came to centre forward. And that was probably hard to tell on the telly as well. You know, he did all his scoring from centre forward.
Right.
And did won all his frees from centre forward. And TJ was in full for most of the game, but if he hit a free, he'd stay out, you know, and he'd drift back in over time. And then when it got into the melting pot the last 10 minutes, TJ came out as well.
Shane McGuigan, you know, followed him everywhere, did he? He did a everywhere. Fairly good job.
Yeah, Shocknil, every single defender they had was earmarked. Man mark.
Yeah. Henry Shefflin said that after game. He said, I knew with them not having football this year, the hurling was going to be top class, and that's what we saw. And I think we performed very well. I don't think we were as sharp as usual, but Slocknail really tied up our forwards. And they did really tie up their... They man-marked them. They marked tight. I honestly, I say this on the show a good few times, that footballers man-mark. And I think defenders in hurling can be turned very easier. I don't know what it is. I think in football, you're marked so tight that you're marked right throughout the game. There's a lad beside you and a sidestep won't throw him off. He shadows you. I just thought that they were able to get their matchups on Ballyhale and they tied up Mullen didn't get it. Wasn't in the game at all. No, Owen Cody not really too much in it. You know, like TJ, no. I thought McGuigan did well and TJ. They man marked him very well.
They did. And they were brilliant. I thought they were sloppy in terms of the amount of frees they gave away. And I know you're saying some of them were soft. Maybe questionable. As I said, the one thing I'll say in Fergal Horgan's defence there is he was right up. You know, he was close to the play. He wasn't what you'd see typical referees 30, 40, 50 metres away making these calls. So, I thought in the balance of play it was fair. But Slocknail probably gave TJ too many opportunities to score frees. Then, at the same time, you know, Ballyhale put up 224, and Colin Fenlish could have had two more goals.
Yeah, so true.
You know, we talk about tying them up. Yes, they did, and they did a great job. But just look at the scoring prowess that Ballyhale team.
They have. They hurt you so many ways. Like if you know, you've two of them tied up.
They have different scorers as well. So like that just tells you the spread of scoring that they have.
No, it definitely does. The other big game, I actually think I was going to start with the Borrisaleigh St. Thomas's game because on paper that was going to be the closer one, but it actually wasn't. The one you were at was the closer one, and for me, this was a very convincing win for Borrisaleigh. It was 7 points in the end with that late goal by JD Devaney, but they were by far the better team, I think, against arguably limited enough Thomas's team in a lot of ways. It was real Roy of the Rover stuff from Brendan Maher. I think they gave Conor Kenny man of the match, but I don't know how anyone watching that game didn't give man of the match to Brendan Maher. Maybe they're tired of giving it to him at this stage. So it's just this cameo at the end where he takes a free and breaks his hurl. So, I don't know, towards the end, during the game, it's young
Kevin
Kelly.
Young
Kevin Maher starts taking the freeze. And I think Brendan, over the course of the game, bullies him out of them. And I don't know how it happens. But
I don't understand it either.
I don't get that. I
got it in the Munster final because it was such a wet day and it was such a big occasion that, you know, it was kind of almost too much pressure on every single free. And it was, you know, scores were at premium that day. But Kevin Maher was hurling really well and had scored a few. So it just seemed to be a case of Brendan would hit whatever one he felt like almost.
I would have thought the early agreement with them is that Maher's on the close in ones because he's accurate and Brendan Maher then is on the long range ones. But over the course of the game, Brendan starts moving closer and closer in. He ended up with 10 points.
Handy ones.
But then, they'll add up. But he got 10. But look, he was absolutely brilliant. And it was like I said, Roy the Rover stuff in that he broke his hurl with the free. The agreement obviously was he'd take the free and because Thomas's were taking quick puck out, stay where you are. And, you know, he chased down the puck out. The puck out came short. It was given back to the goalie. He chased down the puck out and got a flick on it. Now, this is with a broken hurl. The ball broke down to a Borrisaleigh player who hand passed it back into Brendan Maher and off his, fairly sure that's off his bad side. It is off his bad side.
Off his left, if we can call it bad. Yeah.
Sidestep down with half a bloody hurley and sticks it over the bar from an impossible angle. And that's not even having looked at the goals. Like, he turned blind out to his left. You know what I mean? It was unbelievable.
It was unbelievable. And in fairness, I thought his performance against Ballygunner was amazing. And it was, as you said, right or over stuff. This just crowned it off altogether.
Yeah.
He was after putting in a great performance as well. But the half the hurl thing, what a score. And, you know, the audacity to go for then as well. But I suppose the older generation, if there's any of them listening here today, they'll be saying, sure, that's a normal hurl compared to what they used to hurl with. So, to be fair, the size of the boss has changed so much over the years that the bit that broke off it, if you look closely, he still had a good chunk of the boss that's on it. So I read an article, a very interesting article over the winter, about the size of the boss of hurleys now and how large they actually are. And it's amazing. You know, hurls have got smaller in terms of their length and obviously a much bigger boss. So it's totally different what they're using years ago. But no, have to appreciate all the attributes you expect from Burse Lee wrapped up in one particular play, you know, not giving up on the puck, you know, because anyone else could have just given up on that. And obviously then, you know, fantastic score. They don't miss much, you know, they make use of almost every single ball that they get.
St. Thomas's did keep them honest towards the end, but like, I mean, I think Burse Lee had, I was glad in the end Burse Lee won, because I think they'll definitely make a better game of it in the final. I think they have forwards that can hurt Ballyhale, you know, and it'll be a better final for it. The big talking point after the game on TG Cahir, you know, in the interviews, was how Brendan Maher gets himself a free role, and how he gets himself a free role is that Dan McCormack picks up his man, and it's a great little tactic. And Donal O'Grady was asking him, was it a management decision or was it their own decision? And Dan McCormack said it's a bit of both. And so whenever Brendan Maher's man is kind of breaking away and Brendan's holding the centre, Dan McCormack will go over, pick him up. Now Brendan Maher's on a free roll. Yeah. Now he's got a free roll. And Dan McCormack's man needs to be clued into this to go down onto Brendan Maher, but it never seems to happen. And Brendan Maher comes late on the plays, and he just has a complete free roll. And like, they did enough talking about it after the game for Ballyhale Shamrocks to know, right, okay, I don't care where he goes, we're not leaving Brendan Maher. Like, it's difficult then again for a centre forward. He wants to get away from Brendan Maher. So, yeah. And you don't want to stop him doing that. So now Brendan Maher is not following him. Dan McCormack picks him up, and now the other midfielder is asleep and Brendan Maher is not being marked. Have I made sense there?
Yeah, you have. And look, Brendan Maher is such a big player. So, you know, every score he gets then, it's almost like 2 or 3 points. You know, it lifts the crowd. It gives energy to Burse Lee. And generally, they're in a tight game as well, so they're just massive scores, and he's breaking forward. It's a nightmare to mark. It's like, it's not really a centre back role at all. It's a license to do basically whatever you like, and it's so hard to mark. The other side of it is, you know, like, I thought St. Thomas's almost in a way could have left that game behind them. They had so many criminal wides, you know.
Yeah.
They had 6 or 7 shots straight in front of the goal. You know, no excuse for them. And I think their choice of free taker was questionable as well. I have to say, it's we've talked about this at length last year when Stephen Bennett was hitting it in Park, Matney wasn't, and we often talked about Conor Cooney and Joe Canning. And sometimes it's just, you have to go with who it feels better with. And I couldn't understand why Conor Cooney wasn't on those screens.
Yeah, and he played well, Conor Cooney, out in the wing. He got 3.
Yeah, he did. I mean, he was only in and out of the game. I don't think they got enough out of Conor Cooney or David Burke. You know, David Burke, obviously fantastic hurler.
David Burke wasn't in the game at all.
No, he was only in fits and starts as well. And, you know, got probably the game bypassed him for a hell of a lot of it as well. So St. Thomas's will be kicking themselves. Their use of Fintan Burke as well, you know, brilliant offload for the goal. But that's when he was, you know, he drifted into full forward. I thought, you know, he's naturally a defender. If not, then you probably needed him at the edge of the square to show something different for St. Thomas's, because did a lot of aimless ball hit just loose, you know, went over the sideline, over the end line a couple of times. I don't think they got enough out of inside then as well. They could have had a good target man like Fintan Burke in there, as they've seen for that goal.
Yeah, oh, it was Fintan Burke that offloaded that, was it?
It was Fintan, yeah, right. It was him that caught that and offloaded. But then the goalie made a big mistake, because he obviously thought the ball was going to play straight through, and he was completely out of position. But well spotted by Ian Burke, because he did notice he was out of position and went for it then.
Yeah, I saw something I never saw before in this game. It was the first ever fist pump hook. So Ray McCormack was at a fist pump. Brendan Maher was at it as well. We know Brendan Maher does it for Tipperary, but both of them in their defence, they did two fist pumps. They were kind of dynamic freeze that they won, where they hit the ground hard and they're kind of natural. I kind of understood where they came up, but Ray McCormack decided to do a huge big fist pump and then wait a second and then have a delay and then do another huge big one. So he got the first one. Now he hit the ground. He won a great free. And I think it was Bernard Burke, number 12 for St. Thomas's. He saw this second fist pump coming and he hooked the fist pump with his arm. I'm not sure if you saw that or whether you saw enough of it, but it was unbelievable.
I saw all the fist pumping, yeah. After they were really kind of getting into it at that stage. Brendan Bugler would have been really proud of them once.
But did you ever see a man hook a fist pump? It's just fantastic stuff.
I haven't seen a lad give him a hook for giving one arm.
Right, Paddy Power performance of the weekend, here, Brian, to finish up. First one I have down here, and if you can add any if you want, it's just on that second game. I thought Shane Cooney, while St. Thomas's weren't great, yeah, he was outstanding the whole way through the game. What's his story? What age is he? Or is he Galway material? He looked head and shoulders above a lot of players on the field yesterday.
Yeah, he is excellent. And I have to say, the way he hurled, you would say he has something really big to offer to Galway at the moment, you know. Yeah. And Fintan Burke, I think if he's used properly, could have something to offer as well. So Galway have lots of options. But Shane Cooney, I think you're right, he was exceptional. Just he's used to the ball, he's feeling of the ball. He got up the field and got a great score, great interplay with Connor, obviously, for that point as well. So I'll tell you one thing, he's one that definitely left it all in the field yesterday.
No, he definitely did. Conor Kenny got the official man of the match on TG Carr, and he was brilliant as well. Borisoghlaí are like, they have a lot of ways to hurt you as well. We've talked loads about the full forward line. My man Gerry Kelly started off great and got an inspirational early point, but wasn't one of his more influential games. JD Devaney played very well. Kevin Maher drifting all over the field played really well. But the two wing forwards, the Kenny and Kieran Maher, they were kind of came to my attention as, geez, these two boys have a bit about them as well.
Yeah, they're not Ireland final. They're obviously extremely talented hurlers. They're maximising everything they have. They've a very disciplined structure in the way that they play. But it's not often how many teams can put someone like Dan McCormack back as a sweeper as well. You know, remember, he's playing wing forward for Tipperary. Obviously, plays a different type of role and works hard and breaks up a lot of play, but Johnny Kelly, we've talked about this a lot of times, very, very astute and maximises everything to have. And Kieran Maher, great score as well, he got over in the far side. Oh, actually, by the way, this is another talk about, why do they persist with having the camera facing onto the terrace?
Ah, it's terrible. It's terrible.
Yeah. And we know that they can face it the other way, because they have done. Under 21 All-Ireland springs to mind. Some of the Camogie games spring to mind as well.
I'd say it's, without asking TG Carr, I'd say it's to do with cost, because you go up into the stand and the box is there waiting for you. You have to construct one on the other side. But I take your point, like, you hear a great atmosphere under the stand and you don't see anything. Visually, like, the optics are terrible for atmosphere.
And we actually played an All-Ireland semi-final there as well, and it is actually weird hurling on the far side of the field when there's nobody there.
Yeah.
You know, whatever, even about a scatter of 100 or 200 people, you might hear the odd call. But it's a bit freaky when you're on the far side of the field and everything's over on the stand side. So
it's probably not the greatest venue for a club semi-final, is it? It's too big. It's too, like, there must be a smaller venue.
Yeah, but what was the alternative? Maybe go to Ennis? Maybe that would have been the only alternative.
Might have been Ennis.
Or come to Tullamore.
Ennis,
you know, so.
Yeah, Ennis would have been, at least 6,000 or 7,000 wouldn't be completely lost in Ennis. Do you know? I mean, it's completely lost in the Gaelic grounds. Like, you know, the stands are too big, and like, that terrace is empty and the two end terraces are empty. I do.
But it's even something that, like, Limerick, you know, from their own perspective, could look into maybe supplementing the cost of trying to make sure the cameras are on the other side, because whether building a gantry over that side or whatever, because I think it does Limerick as a venue an injustice as well, because, you know, the stand is a fine stand and it's a great atmosphere in there, and I just think it would add to the overall experience for maybe people watching at home. But even, you know, I think it's important that you see, you know, the level of maybe passion that's happening in that stand.
Yeah,
you know?
No, I completely agree. Now, if the Gaelic grounds is full, I like the camera where it was yesterday, because that's a lovely high terrace, or a lovely high seated open stand, and that looks great on the television as well. But yeah, we're hard to please here, the two of us. But camera facing a completely empty terrace, like, that's a no brainer for me. That's, you know, it's just, and then noise coming out of somewhere, and you're like, you're wondering where, you know. Anyways. Right, that's it. Brendan Rodgers, 1-2. His goal was, this fella's like, he's a fullback in football. Can you believe it? Like, surely there's a position you could find this fella that's more, now he's the most attacking fullback you'll ever see. You know, so he's a huge kind of strength of theirs from fullback. But Jesus, just burning lads down the sideline. And then, like, that's top class inter-county standard, putting the points over from that, you know, from that side along the sideline after making a big run. And then his goal was just out of this world.
Yeah, and that first score, I call it, it was definitely the score of the half. And, you know, it was Adrian Mullen, and I think it was another Ballyhale player chasing him, and he just left them all in the way.
Yeah, for dead.
You know, right on the sideline. Like, you know, that's a serious score. And, you know, he was after running maybe 30, 40 metres at that stage as well. So, you know, and he scored a point off his left side over on the other side of the field. So, this man can hurl. And remember, he scored the goal off the left as well.
The goal was off the left,
Yeah, so you know that just shows he has it all. Had the feeling, had the powerful running. Chrissy McHague's another man as well. Obviously,
he was outstanding. He set the tone with that early point as well. Like he's a real leader. Here, would Derry be as well off play Slochneil team as their intercounty team? I don't want to disrespect any other players in Derry, but if they're able to put it up to Ballyhale Shamrocks, Ballyhale Shamrocks are a Joe McDonagh Cup level team.
Oh, 100%.
What's Derry doing struggling around in the Christy Ring when you have a team like Slochneil? Jesus, play 10 of them, play 11 of them.
Yeah. See, the big problem I see, I obviously in my own county, is that they end up, it's not a team, they're not a coherent team then when you go into the county. Do you know, I appreciate the points you're making. Like, if you have 10 or 12 or maybe a good, structure of that team playing with Derry. But then, look, that's a left field thought. I don't think, you have inter-county managers and they want their own stamp on it and they see other players should be fitting in. You know yourself, there's so many dynamics there. I still think what you're saying.
Yeah, their winning mentality, they're used to winning. They've got that confidence. Yeah. Like, there should be 7 or 8 of them. Christ, they're dominating Ulster and, they're the best team in Derry.
I suppose, look, some of them play football and they concentrate just on the football with Derry then as well.
Well, that's true.
Being
June code. So. Yeah, no, that's a fair point. I didn't think of that very obvious point as well. of the footballers, sure, McGuigan and Chrissy McHague and Brendan Rodgers, arguably 3 of their best players yesterday, they'd all be committing to the football. Colin Fennelly, obviously, we talked about him 2-1. Declan Dalton, we talked about him for Father O'Neill's, and they, like I said, play Tullerone now in the final. Tommy Walsh got 2-1 from full forward, not bad. They hammered the Antrim champions. Isn't it gas? This for another year, Kilkenny have the senior, intermediate, and junior finalists. Like the club hurling in Kilkenny is just on another planet.
Unbelievable. But the one thing I'll say, and this is why you never see Tipperary going well at intermediate, it's Kilkenny's 13th team represent them in intermediate championship because they have only 12 senior teams.
Right.
Whereas in Tipperary it's their 33rd team. They have 32 senior teams and it's their intermediate champions to go forward. Cork obviously have a huge amount of clubs and like you can see Declan Dalton, they have obviously a flawed system if you like to call it that. Declan Dalton's have to win the senior county final. I think there was 8 on the panel for Imakili. So, they have their own system going on as well. So that's why you see Kilkenny and Cork dominating at intermediate levels.
That's interesting too, isn't it? And like, I mean, the new Football Review Task Committee has recommended that every county have 16 senior clubs, and that would get rid of all that because you're right, that's not fair. I think Kerry have the same thing at intermediate level because they've only 12 senior teams as well. Their 13th team, which is Temple Knowe, are just hammering everybody in the intermediate, and that's not fair either.
Yeah, and it's the same then with junior, obviously, as well for Kilkenny.
Yeah, there's enough filters down. Yeah,
you know what I mean. Down, yeah. So it's just don't get me wrong. I'm not knocking their system. There's nothing wrong with their system is brilliant. So that's not a slight on the way Kilkenny are doing things. It's just that obviously it's not equal in all counties.
No, it's not equal. And they should probably look to equal it all up. That's what they should do. And that's what they're recommending to do. So that'll be voted on. The Paddy Power performance of the weekend has to go to Brendan Maher. I think Johnny Kelly summed it up. He said after the game, he says, Brendan is one of the greatest hurlers I've ever seen. He's a pleasure to coach. There's no airs or graces about Brendan. He's a Boris Halima. I like this part. He's a Boris Halima first, a Tipperary man second, and he doesn't need any words of mine today to recognise what a great player he is. Some players just love that leadership role with their club and love being that kind of driving force, and he revels in it, doesn't he? He just wants to be everywhere on the field. He's making blocks, he's getting in tackles, he's scoring points, he's blocking down goalkeepers. Like, it's beyond belief what this fella's doing all over the field.
Oh, it is exceptional, and you kind of run out superlatives for Brendan Maher. He epitomises, I think, everything, as I said this already, about Boris Ali and what they're at the moment. But, he has heart, he has determination, he has skill, he has, the bit of flair about him.
Yeah.
He's not afraid to mix it up and he'll get involved with you. And if you're getting the better of him, because I know it firsthand, he'll get stuck in with you as well. He'll rough you up and he has it. He's steel in the mind as well. So he's brilliant. We were actually, a group of my mates, we were having a pint over Christmas and we were debating the team of the decade. And for me and a couple of us, like, he had to be on that team of the decade. I just think he's had an exceptional influence on both Tipperary and obviously his club, Bursalee. And I think it's as you said, it's wider over stuff. It's great that maybe he's getting this opportunity with his club just so late. And to remember, he went through that cruciate injury as well, which would have written off a lot of players, and he's bounced back, you know, at his age, I'm talking about. And he's come back and been arguably putting in better performances since.
In a way, they're Tipperary underusing him. I know they won the All-Ireland. Like, I mean, no one's going to question Liam Sheedy, but he hadn't doing a man-marking role, which for me is just, when you see what he can do yesterday as being, you know, the leader or a free man.
What do you think about now? He man-marked Tony Kelly. So there's not too many people in the country fit to do that.
No.
Do you know what I mean? So, like, plenty of people have tried, but plenty of people have failed when it comes to the likes of Tony Kelly. So,
well, he was in on Galan. He was in on Galan as well.
Yeah, Galan was the main guy as well. Yeah. He's the go-to guy. So that just shows the level of trust.
But it shows how brilliant he is, that at intercounty level he can be a blocker, and at club level he can be an inspiration. Like, there's
most intercounty hurlers at this stage are able to do both. Do you know what I mean? You have to give them that credit too. You often hear Cody saying that as well. These are intelligent guys. They're the best guys in their club, so they should be able to do both.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, Brendan Maher gets Paddy Power performance the weekend. Thanks very much, Brian.
I agree with you on that one, Willie. I have to say.
Which one? Good. There's no way I was going to anybody else this weekend. So that's it. We'll be back on Thursday. We'll do another show and we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. Money back as a free bet on any championship match on live TV. If you're losing, first goal scorer bet gets a goal.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their houses for 10 years.